The next speaker is Professor Amir Tembo from the Department of Mathematics and Statistics at Stanford University. He is a probabilist who has been involved in some of the most exciting developments in probability lately, in concentration measures, for example, and he has also been involved in some of the most widespread applications of probability calculations in the biology world. He has told me that his scope would be more mathematical than other this morning, and I said to him, that's great, that's exactly kind of mixture that we are looking for, and I'm sure it will be wonderful for every one of us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure working here. So this talk will be somewhat of a review, a historical survey, in the sense that much of what I will talk about is related to the early times of this area, where people were mostly doing sequence analysis, and now we are into system biology, so it's definitely much more current and interesting. Also, I would apologize that there is going to be not that much biology, actually little, but I will try to take this opportunity of going over some of the more development in the more quantitative and mathematical part of the contribution to this area as a way maybe to get some insight to how to approach future problems in a way which will bring to also to such successful applications of mathematics and statistics in this area of bioinformatics. And in particular, the talk, of course, will be based on many works, some by me in collaboration with Sam Carlin, Contrianis, and Zaituni, and other works by Jiang and Zhang, most notably, and others I will mention as we go along. So it will be definitely a contribution of many people. So first I want to go to the introduction and sort of give you here a somewhat speculative point of view on how to do a successful application of mathematics or of theoretical work in a more applied area such as bioinformatics. So the first rule is to really get a great problem. Okay? So sequence analysis is a sequence matching is a great problem. Okay? It's a highly relevant problem that many people in biology in the early age of the Human Genome Project definitely needed some kind of a mathematical or statistical way to assign the significance of the results of the experiment. There were many experiments, and they wanted to be able to calibrate them across use of different methods and different proteins and different applications. Okay, so when you approach such a problem, the first thing to do is you want to get your contribution focused, but you want to get it in such a way that it will be available later for more general stuff. You don't want to get a contribution that only applies to doing a very particular application, because this application is probably going to be disappearing soon, or some people might not even be convinced that this particular application is really useful. So you want to retain some generality, but you want to keep some of this, but you want to keep this generality, this level of generality, to people who are experts in the domain field, which in this case is not mathematicians, it's usually biologists, people who work on it, and know what kind of particular matching they are going to do. So the solution in the case of sequence matching was to leave the concept of a score matrix and let people who understand what the numbers should be there to choose those score matrices, but develop a theory that will apply to all of them. So you keep some generality, but you don't try to force on it your mathematics or your statistics. The third part, which came up early in this context, is one should not try to model what one cannot model. And in this context, it's the sequences have a very complicated structure in them. which letters are going to follow which letters and whatsoever. It's pretty impossible or not realistic to assume that with a mathematical or statistical insight alone, you can come up with really very good model that will capture all the richness and the interesting features of proteins. So instead, you just abolish it and you take a model which is definitely not reflective of the sequences, but is at least better than nothing. So you take something simple instead of taking something accurate. And when you combine these three things, what you get is a very clean and interesting theoretical structure. And by structure here, I mean mathematical structure, not biological structure. And when you have it, then you can have nice theory. And if you have nice theory, then usually people like to use it. That's the moral. If you have nice formulas, they are going to appear and reappear and reappear in other areas. So Sam Karlin already explained some of the ways this is used, but he focused on the biology. I will focus here on the derivation of the formulas and the mathematics. And I want to mention two surveys from which I took some of the information here. One is Sam Karlin's 205 paper on many applications of the gapless theory and more other score-based methods. And on the gap alignment, there are a few reviews. I used just a chapter of the thesis of Nancy Zhang, which I will refer to, which has a nice up-to-date current information. So let me start with some material. And hopefully at the end, I will come back to the introduction, and things I mentioned will be more clear. So the first subject is a large exceedances in sequence analysis. So the example here is exactly the charged runs that Sam Karlin mentioned. Mathematically speaking, the way to phrase it is to think about a sequence of data values, x1 up to xn, and these are supposed to be, in our context, these are supposed to be scores associated with a certain sampling letter. The sampling letter can be an amino acid, it can be a base, it can be a codon or a codon triplet, or more complicated pair of amino acids or whatever you want here. And assigned to each letter, you assign a certain score. For example, if you look at charged particles, you may assign plus when it's a plus charge and minus when it's a minus charge and zero otherwise, and so on and so forth. And what you want to do, you want to know what is the, you are assuming that somebody managed to measure the frequency of the particular letters in your sequence or in your database more generally, and this is going to be the probability that you will assign to each letter. And beyond that, we will assume that the letters are independent of each other and obey the same distribution. Now, this is a very naive assumption, but it limits the number of parameters we need to collect to the size of the alphabet. One way to measure significantly unusual pattern is by counting, looking at a segment in the data where we obtain the maximum value of the sum of the different scores. And the goal here would be to find the law of this random variable, this maximum over all possible sums, when we are assuming here that n is going to be very large. This is going to simplify and allow us to use some kind of asymptotic theory. Maybe we'll get a nice simple formula. We are not going to base our research, or we're definitely, people are not going to base biology on the result of these probabilistic formulas, but they can be useful in order to ignore situation where the observed value of the maximum is just not significant enough according to this model. So you are better off, if you have a limited amount of time, you're better off paying maybe more attention to situations where this number is large as opposed to situations where this number is relatively small. Okay. So instead of looking at this variable Rn, I will look at the dual variable Ty, which is the first time that this Rn exceeds Y. Now this is just a mathematical trick that will allow me to write simpler or shorter formulas. Has nothing of significance. It would just save the length of the slides in the presentation. So we want to know what is the asymptotic of this variable Ra. Now, one of the nice things, which already demonstrates this is probably a nice formulation, is that this kind of formulation already appeared in other fields of applied mathematics, not necessarily in biology. has appeared before in at least three areas, in a queuing theory, in a study of coin tosses, and in change point problems in sequential statistics. So in the example of the coin tosses, which is the simplest one, you just assume that the numbers x here are either 1 or minus infinity. They are 1 when you have a head, and they are minus infinity when you have a tail. And then this random variable Rn, what it measures is in a sequence of n coin tosses, what's the length of the longest run of heads. Okay, so that's a very nice problem which people were interested in. And Erdos and Renier wrote a paper in the mathematical literature already in 1970 studying it. In a different context, in the context of engineering, if you look at xi as a difference between service time and inter-arrival time in a queue, what you get here is the maximum waiting time among n customers. So people in queuing theory were interested in it for their own reasons. And in a different point of view, if you look at the problem of change point, you have a data which comes from one distribution, then it changes to another distribution, and you want to locate the point of the change, then you can look at the statistics based on the log likelihood, and the variable ty will tell you information about the false alarm rate in this statistic. So this is just a collection of problems which have nothing to do with the subject of this workshop, but demonstrate that this kind of model leads to nice math. If it would have not led to nice math, you will not see it reappearing all over the place in different areas. Okay, since it already appeared also in different areas, probably there was some theory done for it. The theory done for it is under certain technical assumptions. Now, what would be the natural technical assumptions to assume? Well, you really want to get a situation where typically those values x are going to be negative. Otherwise, you will get just add them up from 1 to n, and you will get a large contribution. So you want to set up your scores so the typical segments will give you a negative contribution. So you make sure that on the average, the contribution is negative. But you definitely want to allow for some high, large, positive contribution. So you make sure that your numbers are such that the probability you get a positive contribution is positive, and you add a certain technical condition which is really of no problem whatsoever in biology, because in biology these numbers are really finite valued, so this is always finite. So under these two assumptions, you have a parameter called theta star, which is the only value, positive value, where this moment generating function is equal to 1. And this number can be found usually by numerical optimization. You just solve this, you write this function, it's a function of theta, and you use numerical package to find when it's equal to 1, and you find this parameter. A result that goes early, at least to Eigenhardt in 1972, developed in the context of queuing theory, is that if you normalize appropriately the variable ty, this dual variable ty, is behaving in an exponential distribution, when it's scaled appropriately, this theta star will tell you the way the scaling goes. And there is another parameter, k star, which represents the fluctuation. These are the two parameters, theta star and k star, which often also appear in BLAST, at least when you need to set up some sense. This parameter, k star, can be given explicitly as far as mathematicians are concerned. For most applications, it has to be found numerically or by Monte Carlo, because these formulas are not really that much useful. In biology context, you're having a random variable xi, which usually take values integer, like plus or minus for the charge. So then in order to get this theory, you of course go over levels of y here, which are also integer values. Okay, so you don't jump in between, otherwise this formula will not be correct. Okay, so this is a theory. You can do a little bit more of this, and you can use it you can extend it to Markov chains. Why would you care about Markov chains? One reason you might care about Markov chains, even if you don't want to put a Markov model, if you happen to put a score here, which is not depending on one letter, but on two letters, then automatically, just because the scores are looking at pairs of letters, you create a dependence, even though your underlying model where you collected parameters was that of an independent variable. you learn more from this theory in the context of biology or sequence alignment, we are not getting alignment, but we are now looking just at unusual patterns of sequences. Well, one of the things you can get out of it is when you analyze a theory that leads to this limiting theory for the score of Rn, what you find also, you find that the empirical law of the letters in the segments that contribute to the large value is very close, when n is very large, is very close to a different distribution function, which is associated with the original one through a multiplication by a factor e to the theta star x. So this gives you a notion of target frequency. So now you can say, when I use my scores x, it means that I'm looking for a segment where the distribution of letters is going to be the same as the original distribution multiplied by this quantity. So it gives me a link between the type of letter distributions you expect to find and the type of score you use. This can be a guidance in choosing scoring sequences. So it gives you two, in biomolecular sequence applications, the two typical applications of this theory are, first of all, as I said, it allows you to assess p-value to the observed value of Rn. And this is, you know, if you just do one experiment, you can take just the largest that comes up. And just study it. Why not? Well, you can just rank order them according to the value and be done with it. The problem is, if you're going to change your parameters a little bit and run it again, and run it on one database and then on another database, this p-value can be used for you as a way to calibrate. So if you have to put an order in which you want to proceed and analyze the results, you might try to just proceed with the largest p-value first. A second, as I said, you can interpret various scoring schemes via the target frequencies, and this is indeed what was done for BLAST in the context of some of the scoring schemes were actually designed by looking at these target frequencies, which are the original frequencies of the letters times e to the theta star times the score. And this is appearing in, this work analyzing was appearing in Karin and Altschul beginning paper in 1990 in proceeding of the National Academy of Science, in a work with Carlin in Annals of Statistics in 1990, and is used in BLAST when you do just not alignment, but just look for scores. Okay, so we move to the next subject, next example of application, and this is sequence alignment. So here we want to look at the maximal non-aligned segmental score. This is sometimes also called gapless alignment, for reasons that will become clear once I talk about the gap alignment. So what are we looking at here? Here we are having two sequences, A1 up to AN, and B1 up to BN. This can correspond to the amino acids of two different proteins. Maybe one is in the data bank and one is in our protein to study. It may be the same sequence. Maybe we are looking for matches in the sequence, and repeats and stuff like that. We have a certain frequencies of letters. This is denoted PA, and another frequency of letters for the second sequence called PB. They may be the same or they may be different. We don't insist on what they are. And then, as I said, we want to retain a flexibility. So the flexibility here is retained by a matching score. So FAB is a matching score assigning value if we find in certain position in one sequence the letter A, in another position of the second sequence the letter B, do we assign to it a high positive value, somewhat negative value, or a high negative value? This relates to what we are trying to find. For example, if we try to find exactly the same matching, we will take FAB to be 1 when A is equal to B, and minus infinity if A is not equal to B. This will try to get a perfect matching. Once you have a discrepancy, you will decide it's not good. However, we know that certain amino acids can be mutated more often than others, so we may not put a minus infinity for those, but a minus small negative number. Or maybe we want to look for matching, but it's a matching which is amino acid specific. We just want to look at matching, but emphasize matching of certain particular bases, so we or amino acids. So we can use different functions here. So again, the AI stands for the letters in the A sequence. The BI will stand for the letters in the B sequence. the PA and PB will usually be taken by the letter frequencies taken either from a large data bank or just by doing a statistical count of what happened in the sequence itself if it's long enough. What would be a typical possible choice of a score? We are looking for a segment. We don't expect these sequences to be exactly the same, but maybe we're looking for a segment which is similar, so maybe it's doing the same functionality. In this case, what we can do, we can try to sum the scores we get over the segment. This, in my case, the segment started at position I in the first sequence A, position J in the second sequence B, and then I was counting a segment of length delta, summing the scores, and I'm taking the maximum of all possible choices of the starting point in both sequences and the length of the segment. That's why it's called maximal, non-aligned, matching score, because I'm doing a matching score between A's and B's, but I don't insist on aligning the beginning point of A to the beginning point of B. That's not like a global alignment. Sometimes this is called local alignment, because I let myself move the segment in the two. So what do we want to do? We want to do something similar to what we asked about the RN score here, which involved just one sequence. What we want to do? We want to find the law of MN when N is very large, and in sequence comparison experiments, we will pass only those MN values over the data bank, which has a p-value which is small. And again, for simplicity of the presentation, I will move to the dual variable just because the formulas there are simpler to write, not because it has more meaning. It actually has probably much less meaning for biological manners, but it's just shorter formulas to write. Okay, so the intuition here is that what we are having is we are trying to go over n squared pairs, because we can choose the AI in n ways, we can choose the BJ in n ways, and once we make the choice of what is the beginning in each sequence, then we are running into the problem that we studied before. So we should expect the value of MN to have the same distribution as the value of R, the one sequence guy, but with the parameter N replaced by N squared. And what the mathematics is reaffirming is that this intuition is correct, in the sense that if you are under similar assumptions, which I will go over later, you get a probability of Ty exceeding a certain value is all going to be exponential. You will have the same two parameters, K star and theta star, that appeared in the previous game. If the parameters are the same, of course, they will be a little different, because now the meaning of X here is different. The X will be the F of A and B. So it will be a random variable or defined on the letters AI and the letters BJ. The alphabet will be the product of the two, and it will have the value of X will be the value of F for letter A and letter B. And this formula, although you don't see it explicitly that way, it's exactly the same as saying that MN should be approximately RN squared, and looking what will be the tail distribution of RN squared, and putting it for MN. Now, this theory is correct, but it's correct only under certain limitations. What are the limitations? First, we have the previous limitations. We want the expectation of the score to be negative. Otherwise, the contribution will be from the whole sequence, and it will not be a local contribution from one segment. We also want, though, to get the probability of the score to be positive, to be strictly positive. We want the score to be bounded above, but this is, again, not a problem at all in the biology setting, because the score is always finite valued. But there is another condition here, and this condition is not as strict as what is written here, but it's satisfied in particular when the two sequences have the same distribution and the score is symmetric. That's the same, if everything is completely symmetric, there is no distinction between the one protein you check and the other one, and the scoring method you use is exactly symmetric. You don't care what is A and what is B. Then this theory will work very nicely. You will have one parameter theta star with this property. You will have the K star from the previous slide, and you will have this theorem. Now, what can go wrong? What can go wrong? If PA is very different than PB, if the sequences are very different, it might be that one sequence is really limiting you. You have to find this particular part of the matching in one sequence. That's so hard, it doesn't matter what the other sequence is doing. So you're not getting n squared, but you really got only n degrees of freedom corresponding to the limiting sequence. And there is a technical condition that characterizes which of the regimes you have, either the A is limiting or the B is limiting, or both of them are acting together. And this result applies to when both of them are acting together. It can be relaxed you don't need to have A to be equal to B. There is a special, you can calculate exactly what are the conditions. So in this work with Carlin and Zeitouni, we analyze those conditions and we find the regime, and in this regime, this theory applies. Once you have it, and here comes the nice thing about math. Once you have it, you have it. Right? Not only do you have this result, but you get many more results. In math, you have to prove things, it's very painful, it's very upsetting, it's a very slow process, but usually when you are done, you can do lots of similar things with the same swoop of the pen. You can just say, oh, I did it, it's more the same. So in particular here, for example, you can do more than two sequences, it's exactly the same theory. Of course, you have to have different formulas, but you can derive the formulas easily now, and you, all the verification has been done before. You can also deal with characterization of the limits of the empirical law, because we have already done it for one sequence, so we can do it for two sequences. So now we can give a target distribution meaning to scoring methods used for sequence alignment. And this is also done in the context of BLAS. The Blossom scores have been derived in or related to this situation. And moreover than that, you can do lots of other things which I will not even mention, but Sam Carlin mentioned a little bit in his talk, the application of these things. You don't need to take only the largest score. Now you can take the largest score and then do it the second largest score. And you can find out what the formula will be, because this formula is based on using Poisson approximation, so you can deal with the maximum, you can deal with the second maximum, you can add them up, find the distribution of the sum, and so on and so forth. So what I'm saying is the p-value can be assigned now for without much restriction to the number of sequences. You don't need n, the lengths to be the same. You can take one length is n, the other length is m. It's similar formulas. You can get not only the largest score, but you can get the second largest scores, and so on and so forth. And this has been reported in many papers in biology journals by Sam Carlin and his group, which were using this kind of formulas or variations thereof to get biological inference, some of which Sam showed. And also, it's not limited to checking protein against the database. You can use these things also to check species. You can take, with somewhat extension, you can look at consensus sequences and look at collections and do the average and all sorts of things. Once you have a theory, it's sort of, you can easily extend from it. Now I want to move to another problem. And this one will be a local matching of protein structures, which Sam mentioned a little bit in his talk. And that's the situation. What do you do when you also have information about the position? Okay, so you have your letters. These are the amino acids in the example. But now you are given also the positions. You are told where these molecules are. And for the simplicity, the position really is not a point, but for the simplicity, mathematical symmetry, I don't want to model what I don't have to, so I will assume that the molecules are just points and I will somehow find their center of gravity or just assign to them one point. So for the purpose of mathematical modeling, we will just have two sequences, A1 to AN, but they are now positioned in places in space. D here will obviously be three places in space. So what we are looking at approximate match. But now it's localized in space. It's not necessarily localized in on the sequence space, because we want to see matches in near proximity, because that's where the chemical interaction is. The chemical doesn't care about that much about the primary sequence. It cares about where things are located in space. Okay, so this looks quite problematic, especially because we have no clue how to model the positions. And also doing the statistics on such an object looks quite complicated. So one suggestion that Sam made was to go for the simplest. Go for the simplest. How will you go to the simplest? You will just use the position to reorder your sequences. And once you reorder your sequences, you have a sequence problem. So it's like the usual joke about how mathematicians are solving problems. They just go back to the problems they already solved. So that's not necessarily a bad idea, especially if there is no other alternative. Just say, okay, give me something better, and we'll see. So the suggestion was, what we'll do, we want to reorder the letters by looking at increasing distance from a certain particular point. So we have now we'll get, instead of one sequence, we'll have n different sequences, because we want to focus on location in space. We don't know what location means, so we just take a particular sequence, say this is our zero, let's organize everybody around it in linear distance, and this will give us a sequence going from this AIP. So we have sequence per P, and we can have a similar sequence for Q, and then we can use our usual trick, we know how to do this kind for fixed P and Q, and we'll just maximize also over the P and Q. This will give us a kind of local alignment where we allow for the where is the center here, where is the center here, and what sequences we use. Now, here we take a distance. The distance doesn't need to be the Euclidean distance. That's not necessarily the best thing to do. Maybe you want to let your biologist or statistician or somebody with much more knowledge come up with a formula for the distance. And in Sam's paper, there are choices of different distances which lead to different information. So the same as with the scoring system, it's a good idea to leave some generality.
I was wondering, what do you do if there's some ambiguity? I mean, in the crystal structure itself, it might be uncertain to where the order would not be. Is there some way you can model that? If you had two residues essentially the same distance, and you know which one to put first, could you somehow merge them as adapted?
Well, in principle, if you were doing gapped matching, this would somehow solve it because it would allow you to jump on one. If you're doing gapless matching, which what I represent, this is a bad situation, and probably will not work very well. The mathematics for gapped alignment is in poor shape still, so I will say something about it later. So maybe it's a motivation to combine gapped alignment methods with ordering methods, because then it doesn't matter. You can jump over if you make the wrong substitution of the two letters. In principle, it should not matter though that much, because if you have two which are like this one's supposed to be the third one, this one is the fourth one, and you flip them, you made a mistake in two matches. But since we put here a finite, we are not talking perfect matching, finite score, it will deteriorate a little bit, but not that much. You can do something more clever. You can make the F here depend on the distance a little bit, cut it out. You can do all sorts of things to deal with it, but this will complicate the presentation beyond the recognition. So. Okay, so we want to derive again the theory for that, and the theory for this is very similar to the theory for this was done, the mathematics of this was done in a paper of Jiang in 2000. And assuming the same conditions as in our work with Carlin and Zaytuni, you get essentially the same results, that the Wn has the same law, this Wn has exactly the same law as the Mn, which was on this slide before. The same law as this guy. Mn. And the same theorem would apply for the dual of Wn. So essentially, you can get the same result. There is a slight extra technical condition you need here, otherwise it will not work. And one other thing which I ignored here, very conveniently, I didn't say what we want to do, but that's probably more or less obvious to everyone. What we want to do, we want to find again the limit law of Wn when n is large, and if we do a sequence comparison experiment of this type, we will pass only those Wns which have, only those experiments which have, or results which have a Wn which is very large, which will be modeled by a p-value which is very small. I avoided the issue of how to model the positions, and that's a very problematic thing, so let's model them as IID. IID uniform on the cube. And that is under this condition, Jiang devised his mathematics, but Carlin and other people have already used these formulas from MN just because there was no other formula before. So they were using it in a sense anyway. Because and this result, mathematical result, is not that sensitive to the choice of the positions, of the model of the position. And as I said, since we don't have a better model, we are taking here a model which is very questionable, but as you can say, also the model using ID model for the sequences was also quite questionable as a model for DNA. So you can think of it as a benchmark model, and benchmark models don't need to be accurate. So the moral is, if you use this kind of procedure, this kind of statistics, and you are doing this reordering, then in principle you will have the same type of limiting distribution with the parameters theta star and k star, which will be the same as Mn, but now it will be corresponding to whatever f you use here for the a and b, and you will also have to that's what. This whole example was what is called in the alignment literature, say, gapless alignment, because we are not putting in any gaps. In the context of alignment, you want to do something better, because it is known that biological sequences have insertion and deletion. So just trying to match directly is not such a great idea. You can do better if you accommodate the opportunity to make some jumps. So let's move to this direction, which will bring us to a new problem, but again, it will not be that different. Somehow it will be related, but not exactly the same. So what do we want to do now? After we choose in the other slide, on the other side, once we choose the beginning segment, I and J, we just take the letters one at a time, and we only allow for mutations, for scores, for finite scores. In this context, we allow ourselves now to jump in the sequence later, so we are free to choose which positions we want to align. So we want to align the A with the starting point I, then we jump not by K, but by LK, and here we jump by MK, which may not be the same. And this allows us to collect a much larger score. But if we do only that, then we will definitely collect a huge score just by jumping wherever convenient for us. And this will have no biological significance whatsoever. So we should be penalized whenever we make a jump. A jump means that we are assuming that between the two sequences there will occur certain insertions in one sequence or deletions in the other. This assumption should cost us a certain amount of money, certain cost. And this will prevent us from doing too many of those just in order to artificially create a large score. This is done by the so-called gap penalty function, G, which is a function of the difference between the two positions, the jump in L and the jump in M. And of course, if L, difference between L is 1, then this will be 0. If difference between M is 1, this will be 0. We are not allowing ourselves to jump in both sequences, because we just said, either you jump in one, that's deletion here, or that's deletion there. If you want to jump in both of them, that's like starting a whole new segment. And to do that, we can deal with it later anyway. So we start at L1 and M1 equal to 1. Now, when you do that, there is a level of generality here in the choice of the function G. But this is a whole function, so analyzing the whole function or choosing a whole function is very complicated. So people came with the idea of using the simplest possible model, which is an affine gap penalty. And what is an affine gap penalty? You just pay a fixed cost for starting the gap, and then you pay a cost per letter for continuing the gap forward. This is the nice thing about this. It minimizes the number of parameters you need to figure out what to put to two numbers, this delta 1 and delta 2. There are different papers that are called in different letters. Of course, if you have zero gap, then you pay no penalty. This delta 1 and delta 2 are supposed to be positive, so you pay more the larger the gap you make, and you may pay more as soon as you try to put a gap. Okay, so we have bounded score and two gaps which are positive. In a paper of Aratia and Waterman in 1994, 10 years ago, they managed to find, using the mathematical theory of percolation or subadditivity, that there are two regimes in this parameter space In one regime of parameters, the score will go linearly. This will correspond to a situation where the gap somehow is too small, and you get, and you don't pay too much, and since you don't pay too much, you will just run around until you collect big positive contributions somewhere of the order of the length of the sequence, and that's what people usually in biology don't want to have. They want to have something significant, but rather localized. In the other regime, which is a significant localized, this is called the logarithmic regime, because in this regime, the MNG still behaves approximately like logarithm in N, which is a behavior of the MN in the other side. So this is very similar to what happens when you have no gaps. So what you would like to do, as a theory, what you would like to do is to find the limit distribution when you are in the logarithmic regime. You want to find which choice of parameters will give you the logarithmic regime, because then you will restrict, whenever you apply BLAST, you will restrict your attention to this situation. And you want to maybe find the bounds on the p-values of the scores. And some special cases of this were handled in larger generality, first by Sigmund and Yakir in 2000, then by Chen in 2003, and by Zhang in 2005. So there is some more recent development in this area, but this is much more complicated. So we are coming here closer to reality, very far from reality, but closer to reality, at the cost that the mathematics is getting close to the boundary of what we can do. And the problem, of course, is that once you allow yourself to move around here, you lose a lot of this nice structure that you had before, which came from the structure of a random walk. For people who are familiar with probability. So you lose some structure, you retain some, you try to do the best possible. So here is some recent development from Chen and Zhang walk, which give you some information on the what you can do. Okay, so we try to answer to some degree some information, and the nice thing is this is sort of tied a little bit to what we did before for the gapless alignment. So if you remember, for the gapless alignment, if you remember when we talked about the gapless alignment, what was important was this function, this moment-generating function. We were comparing it to 1. This gave us a parameter theta star that led to the behavior of the large gross behavior of the score. In this situation, we have gaps. So we multiply this function by another function, which you can think of it as a distribution function, over the size of the gap. Okay? So this is a function which counts over the size of the gap. The possible gaps which we are allowed is either no gap, 0, 0, we made no gap, or one gap of length k in the top sequence, or one length of gap k in the bottom sequence. So this is a set of all possible gaps, and we can think of this new function. Once we have this new function, we can look at it, we can assume maybe there exists a parameter theta which is positive, such as this new function multiplied by our original function will still be equal to 1. If we are lucky, and this happens to be to hold, then the work of Chen showed that then the scores are in the logarithmic regime. That's good news, because these are scores which we can use for biology. And there is a tail distribution on the probability that Mn exceeds x, which is approximately n squared, which is a number of choices for the top and the bottom segment, times a certain exponential decay, which parameterized by theta t. So this is very similar. It's not as accurate as what we had for the no gap, but it's similar in spirit. So you get a very simple, similar in spirit condition, and you have both the criterion for the logarithmic regime and the bound hold under something which is not that difficult to compute. You can check this, compute this function numerically, run a numerical optimization problem, and check whether you can get to 1 or not. Unfortunately, this is not always working. And even in scores which are well known empirically to work very well, this is not always working. Not always a theory is matching what can be done in practice. The nice thing is that the way to do this, to derive this, is based on considering what would have happened, what would be the target frequencies. You remember, we had the target frequencies in the gapless alignment. They corresponded to taking the original frequencies multiplied by a certain weighting factor that was taking into account the scoring matrix F. So now we have something similar, but now we have weights or target frequencies which correspond to weights on the mutation plus weights on the gaps, because we are allowing a family of gaps, so we can think of having a new distribution on the length of the gap. And doing this, just using this probability measure, new probability measure, it's a little bit of probability, will give you already this bound, and from this bound comes a logarithmic. So once you see this idea, it's sort of the derivation is not at all complicated. However, as I said, this is not working as good as it should be. So a new observation of Zhang in 205 is that you don't really need to consider all possible segments. It's not a good idea to do this for all possible choices of the letters in the segment that you are matching. Because the observation is, if you look at an optimal alignment, here is an optimal alignment, you can decompose it to sections. This is a section where you match these letters, delta letters here, with this delta letters here, with no gap whatsoever. And here was your gap. So you can just break it to first gap, the match after it, another gap, the match after it, and so on and so forth. And now the observation is, not every match will be optimal. The match has to be locally optimal. What does it mean locally optimal? In particular, if you move the first letters here at the beginning of the match to here, it's like moving your gap from this size to this size without changing its length. So it will change nothing to the gap penalty, but it will may change the scoring system. So what you have, you must have a segment where the scoring cannot improve by such operations. Such segments, we will call them locally optimal, or Jean calls them locally optimal. And now what you want to do, you want to redefine your P star over P, this change of measure, not to change measure over letters individually, but change measure over segments, and not do it over all segments, but take into account only segments which are optimal. The segments here are going to be finite. So in principle, it's a larger enumeration. These functions which will appear here will be more complicated. The formulas will be slightly more complicated. But the result will be both improved in the range of applicability and an improved in the bound. You can get more relevant scores to be proved to be logarithmic and better upper bound at the cost of getting more complicated formulas. So you can see that sort of, as you try to be more realistic, as you try to be more close and more relevant, you pay a cost. At some point, the cost breaks down, but I think that all of these examples are still within the reasonable cost. And as what Sam said, and that was important, is that once you got the beginning theory, once you got the theory, and this was what happened, you know, the behavior of this field, the history of this field is that in 1985, people started doing the work on perfect matching. Just doing the Erdos-Renier coin toss, just perfect matching. Then they realized that the biologists really wanted matching with scores. They wanted some degree of freedom in allowing some errors. So they put the scoring method into this scheme, and in 1990, they developed the theory of one sequence, and a few years afterwards, theory of many sequences, and afterwards, something which applies to structures. Here, some more stuff applied to gaps. Also, the application of these things, of the same formulas, was used, as Sam said, it can be used to find unusual things in protein. It can be used to try to do inference across species, like what Sam gave in the last lecture. It can be used to look for a protein in a data bank, which is the original purpose or main purpose of BLAST. And the point is that if we can find a similar problem, nice problem, in system biology, and we can find nice formulas. We'll have a nice decade. So that's what I want to finish. If we can find something similar, we'll be in great shape.